I am Plunt on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A new biography of Joey Smallwood is out now. It's called Joey Smallwood, Schemer and Dreamer, the life of the successful journalist and radio star turned Newfoundland premier for 23 years. Is chronicled in this book. Its author, Ray Argyle, joins me now. I'll ask him about who Smallwood was, what drove him to public service, and how he might have changed Canada through Newfoundland's entry into Confederation in 1949. Smallwood was born in 1900, dying nearly 91 years later. Ray Argyle is a writer who's appeared in publications such as The Beaver and The National Post. His last book was The Boy in the Picture, and he was last on this program for his book Turning Points, which was published in 2004 and reissued last year. He spent many years in the public relations business, establishing Argyle Communications. RayArgyle.com is the website for more information. This book is a quest biography published by Dundurn. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program in Toronto this day, Ray Argyle. Mr. Argyle, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph. It's good to be back with you after quite some time.
Yeah, 8 years or so, yeah.
Well, we've both been busy.
We have, yeah. This is a great book. Now, I understand that Dundurn, they publish these biographies. I guess they call them quest biographies. Did they approach you about writing about Smallwood, or how did that work?
It was a mutual agreement. I was well aware, of course, Dundurn having published my most recent or previous book, The Boy in the Picture. I was well aware of Dundurn's program of issuing biographies of prominent Canadians in politics, the arts, business, and other fields. And in a discussion with the editor there one day, I suggested that Joey Smallwood would be an appropriate character. They liked the idea and asked me to do the book. So I was pleased to do that because I guess over the past 30 years I've visited Newfoundland on many occasions. Being a native British Columbian, I've always felt a certain affinity for the Rock, and I've always enjoyed visiting Newfoundland and learning about Joey Smallwood. So I had some reasonable understanding of what drove his life, and I was delighted to have the opportunity to go back there last year and spend some time in further research, particularly at Memorial University, at the Joseph R. Smallwood Foundation, where I had access for the first time of any writer to personal correspondence and files that he had left behind. And so I was able to write a biography that I believe captures more of the essence of Joey Smallwood as a human being, as a person, as well as providing a latter-day look at what his impact has been on Newfoundland. I think my book completes the arc of the Joey Smallwood narrative. Coming 21 years after his death, I think it lets us assess his life against where Newfoundland stands today. And as you mentioned in your introduction, to what extent his career and his success in bringing Newfoundland into Canada has changed Canada over the years.
Now, in terms of his impact, Newfoundland is doing far better now than it did, I guess, even at the time of his death, during his life.
Indeed.
So you can draw the line from Smallwood and whatever he did at the time in the course of his life to today, the success of Newfoundland today. Can
you
draw
it? Oh, very much so. I think you certainly can because, of course, fundamentally, Newfoundland has benefited and continues to benefit from being part of Canada, not merely from having access to the social programs of the Canadian Confederation, but as part of the economic union. And I think of the credibility that Newfoundland has achieved of being part of a stable and prosperous and economically viable country, which, of course, Newfoundland was not when it was an independent colony standing on its own. It was penniless, a high level of poverty, highest tuberculosis rates in North America, 17 dentists to serve the entire island. Over the years, the presence of Newfoundland in Canada has had quite a consequence. As one of the more noted Ottawa politicians once observed, Jack Pickersgill, who had a great relationship with Joey Smallwood, he observed that when Joey first came to Ottawa and was hanging around Parliament wanting to meet the Prime Minister, he met Pickersgill, who was the PM's assistant at that time. And as Pickersgill would later recount, it didn't take long for Joey to convince me how much Canada needed Newfoundland. So there he was. But I think that one of the signal consequences of Newfoundland joining Canada was the creation of the equalization formula, whereby from the 1950s there was a transfer of funds through Ottawa from the better-off provinces to the less developed provinces. That was initiated to give Newfoundland a boost. And it certainly did that. I think that today, of course, Newfoundland's an energy power, an island of prosperity. I think a lot of that can be linked to Joey Smallwood's policies. Now, number one, I would say, of Joey Smallwood's achievements was his creation of a modern educational system. I think it was that effort, the creation of Memorial University, of technical schools, the enhancement of the educational standards throughout the province, that's had a tremendous impact that has enabled Newfoundland to make its way in the modern world.
Now, he obviously has detractors. I mean, there are people that didn't like him in the course of his life, and there are people nowadays who still think that Newfoundland shouldn't have joined Confederation in 1949.
Well, it was popular to say that, you know, a few years ago, and to make comparisons, for example, with Iceland and with Ireland, and to point out that those were two small nations that achieved great results. But of course, we know what happened. We know what happened to Iceland with its fiasco over its unlimited banking adventures. And similarly in Ireland, we know what happened in Ireland when tax rates, corporate tax rates, were reduced to the point where while there was an attraction of foreign investment, it brought no tax revenue into the country. And when we saw both of those island nations gripped by extreme economic crisis, from which neither have yet recovered. And I wonder, you know, had Newfoundland been independent, might not it have suffered the same consequence?
How do you think Canada's changed because of Newfoundland's entry? I mean, you've just talked about how Newfoundland's changed, but how do you think Canada, as a whole, this country today, how do you think that's changed because of?
Well, the fiscal arrangements between the provinces resulted largely from that we've had the last many years. Resulted largely from Newfoundland being part of Confederation. I think there's been an immense cultural consequence from Newfoundland being among us. You know, when we can think of all the outstanding writers, artists, musicians, musical groups, television personalities. I mean, I could name so many, from Rick Mercer to Great Big Sea. They've had an immense contribution and an immense impact on Canada culturally. The authors, Wayne Johnson, many others, have won a privileged and prized position in the Canadian literary firmament. So Newfoundland has certainly contributed to Canada and has certainly played a role in you know, creating the Canada that we live in today.
Now, let's start at the beginning of Smallwood's life. Let's go to the beginning of Smallwood's life. What compelled him to enter public life? I mean, was there something that really drove him?
Well, Smallwood was a socialist, from his youth. He was a socialist of the old school, the belief that through public ownership, that the profits of the labor of the working class could be more properly returned to those who dug the minerals out of the ground, who cut down the trees, who brought in the fish from the fisheries, and so on. And he was very much a convinced socialist from his youth. He began his working life with working on newspapers in Newfoundland, in St. John's, but he was keen to get down to the States to get more experience. At that time, in the early 1920s, the Socialist Party was still a power in American politics. It was suffering from the Red Scare that swept the United States after the First World War, but it was still a power, and Smallwood determined that he would get down to New York and get a job with the New York Call, and that was the great socialist newspaper of that era. He did so. He got to New York, and he worked there for several years. Great success as a journalist. Interviewed many of the top personalities of the day. But he always had a hankering to get back to Newfoundland. And when he was offered a job heading up a pulp workers union in Newfoundland, he grabbed it and went back to Newfoundland, organized the pulp workers union, then discovered that the maintenance workers on the Newfoundland Railway, that 700-mile-plus stretch of lonely line extending across the island, they were about to get their wages cut, and he thought this was not right. So he set out to organize a union for the maintenance workers, for the section hands. He walked every mile of that railway, and as he traveled, he signed up virtually all of the maintenance workers. His fame spread, and by coincidence, when he got to St. John's, he bumped into the president of the railway, and he told him what he'd been doing. He said he'd organized the workers, and they were prepared to go on strike, and that would, of course, cripple the railway. Immediately, Smallwood won a reversal of the wage cut, and in fact, of course, he was really working himself out of a job, as he commented later. But from there, he went on to more newspaper work, work in radio, which really made him famous throughout Newfoundland. He had a nightly program called The Barrel Man, and he told anecdotes and told stories of life in Newfoundland and of the history of the province. And he was, a household name. Mm-hmm. By that point. In 1946, when he was on a business trip to Montreal, he picked up the Montreal Gazette at breakfast one day and discovered that Britain was going to order a plebiscite, a referendum, to be held in Newfoundland in order to give the people an opportunity to determine their future as to whether they wish to continue as a colony governed by the British Colonial Office, or find some alternative to that. He made up his mind that Newfoundland's destiny lay with Canada, and he undertook to start a campaign to that end. The first step was to get himself elected to the Newfoundland Convention, mm-hmm. because it was a special convention called to investigate the alternatives to colonial government and to set out the questions that would be asked of the population in a referendum. And he got himself elected handily and became the leading, almost only, spokesman for Confederation, and had a tough battle to get Confederation on the ballot. The convention was dominated by merchant class representatives who didn't want the competition from Canada that Confederation would bring. And finally, he had to lead a public campaign and an appeal to Britain to get Confederation on the ballot. He was successful. It did go on the ballot. And in the first referendum on June 3rd of 1948, there were three options. A continuation of the existing colonial type of government, Confederation with Canada, or independence. Mm-hmm. Well, Confederation was in first place, but it didn't have a majority. Colonial government was third, so it was dropped off. And in the second referendum, on July 22nd, 1948, Confederation won. Not by a big margin. I think it was 52.2% of the vote. But, you know, that's better than the 50-49 margin by which President Obama won re-election.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Did you ever meet him, Smallwood?
I never did meet Smallwood personally, no. Unfortunately, by the time I was in a position to be traveling back and forth to Newfoundland, he was no longer the premier, so I didn't have that opportunity.
Yeah, he was not a tall person, right?
Oh no, he was a little man. Yeah. On a good day, he weighed 100 pounds.
Yeah, but he just had this huge personality.
He had this huge personality, this driving enthusiasm. I think you know that. He succeeded, I think, as a leader, because I think he possessed what I considered the three essential qualities of leadership. First, a vision, an idea, a goal. Second, absolute belief in that mission, that it's in the best interests of the people. And third, the ability to communicate that vision. Joey had all of those things. He was a great communicator, of course, from his days as a radio broadcaster. He'd learned how to build suspense and keep the interest of his listeners. Let me tell you an anecdote from his Confederation campaign. When he was campaigning, he hired a small float plane to visit the dozens of outports that were scattered up and down the coast of Newfoundland. His plane would swoop into an outport harbor. It would taxi to a stop a few yards from the shore. And then Joey would get out. He had a loudspeaker under his arm. He'd get out. He'd clamber onto a pontoon to give a speech to the people who had gathered on the shore with this remarkable arrival of this plane. They'd never seen anything like it. But more important, the idea that a politician would come to see them, that was something they'd marvel at. Of course, being a good organizer, Smallwood had arranged it all very carefully. There'd be a band on hand to entertain the crowd. Other times, welcoming parties fired off volleys of shotgun blasts to announce his arrival. But he certainly made his presence felt, made the people aware that he was there, that he cared about them, that he had an idea, that he was keen to sell to them, and they bought into his vision.
And at the end of his life, I mean, he was still a Newfoundlander, but did he feel Canadian at all?
Oh, I think he did. I think the title of his autobiography, I Chose Canada, is an indication of that. When he left office, and I'm not one to say, and anyone who reads my book will know this, I'm not one to say that Joey Smallwood was perfection personified. Mm-hmm. To the contrary, I think he had many faults. I think he practiced, I use the term benign corruption. I think he practiced benign corruption in terms of achieving the results that he thought was in the interest of the people. He spent a lot of public money. A lot of public money was spent on luring questionable industrialists to come into Newfoundland to start various fanciful projects, some of which materialized, most of which did not. Those which materialized were not very successful. And I think it was a common, practice of that era of government to subsidize and to bring in, to try to bring in new industry. Joey Smallwood said we must industrialize if we're to survive. The reality is that if a proposition makes economic good sense, business will see to it that it is realized, regardless of whether government is there to stand in the way or to help along the way. So a lot of his industrial schemes came to naught, but he did give the province an underlying basis of prosperity, and he brought in a modern educational system which has enabled Newfoundlanders to excel in a competitive world. Canada has benefited as a result of that.
Now, you mentioned that you're a native British Columbian. I read somewhere that you were born in Creston, is that right?
That's correct. I was born in Winnipeg, but I grew up in Creston.
Oh, you grew up in Creston. How long ago is it that you left Creston?
Oh, it's been 40 years.
Yeah. Do you get out here often?
I try to get out every year.
Yeah.
I had a wonderful visit 2 years ago when I launched my book, The Boy in the Picture, in Revelstoke at the Railway Museum there, because that book is about young Edward Mallandyne, the boy who was seen in the famous photograph of the driving of the last spike.
Uh-huh.
He was a 17-year-old boy, got himself into that picture. When Edward Mallandyne was a very old man, and I was a very young boy, I knew him.
Huh.
Because he was the mayor of Creston, and I remember the many fascinating stories that he would tell about his life.
Now, I understand you write full-time now.
Yes, I do. I continue to do consulting work. I no longer operate my company. I sold my firm, Argyle Communications, to the Environics Group. Happily, they have carried that on and made an absolutely outstanding success of that agency. I'm so pleased with how that has turned out. And I'm able to devote myself to what I've always really wanted to do, just to write, to gather information, to develop my point of view, and to put it into articles and books.
Yeah.
I very much enjoyed doing the Smallwood book. That has encouraged me to go on to a new project. I'm now researching the life of Charles de Gaulle.
Hmm.
And I think there are some very interesting connections between Canada and Charles de Gaulle. And I think there are some very interesting historical facts to be set in place. And a new appreciation, I think, is needed of de Gaulle's role in post-war Europe and in the post-war world. And I hope to be able to bring a good argument together in that case.
Well, we'll await that. But until then, the people ought to pick up this book on Smallwood. It's a great book. It's not that long, but
it's designed as a not a short read. It's 50,000 words.
Yeah.
But it's a $20 book. I think it's in most of the bookstores, and it's certainly available online, I know, at Chapters and Amazon. Joey Smallwood, Schemer and Dreamer.
Ray, it's been nice talking again. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much, Joseph.
You're very welcome. The website for more, rayargyle.com. It's a Quest biography from Dundurn. It's called Joey Smallwood, Schemer and Dreamer. It's author Ray Argyle on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plato.